everybody, and welcome back to the Dungeon Journal. I'm Matt, and despite it being the weekend after Thanksgiving, I've been a very sad panda this week.
I am Frank, or Soltura, and I have no awesome intro, so hey, happy podcast after Thanksgiving. Next.
Thank you for calling Sushi. He's not in right now, but if you leave a message, he will return your call as soon as he overcomes his Hearthstone and Turkey coma. Beep.
Oh, man. That's right. It's our podcast after Thanksgiving, and we're a little bit lazy this week, it feels like. Sushi, how's your week been, man? I know you left us to go home with family, and I haven't talked to you since, let's see, what was it, Wednesday?
I know, I feel so estranged from both you guys. I missed you guys, man. You know?
One nice thing.
Aw, thanks. One nice thing about the holidays is it feels like having three Saturdays, you know? But Saturdays are such a lazy day for me that having three lazy Saturdays and now we're recording on a Sunday, it feels pretty lazy. I mean, I got my hoodie on, I got my pajama pants on. I've just been chilling, man. You know, I went home to visit my folks for Thanksgiving, and I don't have a high-powered laptop, so I brought my 9-year-old Dell Inspiron laptop, and I was like, you know, parents, they go to sleep early. Mine go to sleep like 9:30 or 10. So I popped out the old laptop, installed Hearthstone, and, you know, during the installation process, they said, well, you have like half the processing power and half the RAM that this game requires. It's probably not going to run great. But I said, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. And I was surprised. It ran pretty well on that old laptop, which was really cool. So I just played a ton of Hearthstone. But that, you know, that was kind of it this week. This week got cut short. I only got to raid like twice. So, you know, that was cool. But yeah, how about you guys? What do you guys have going on this week?
Me, I also had Thanksgiving with the family. Raiding, though, I didn't get to raid at all this week, with the exception of Flex Friday, because work issues. So, and I've got another whole week of work issues and non-raiding. So it's been very, very taxing for me because I need to raid. Thanksgiving was fun overall, though. Had a good time hanging out with my sister and my mom. So that was cool. Had some turkey, took a nap. Took a couple naps. How about you, Hoba?
It's not been a very eventful week for me either. I filled in for Frank, tanking on my Death Knight, and I can definitely feel the fact that I don't have the kind of gear that Frank has. I get hit a little bit harder than anyone else. I definitely feel the fact that because I don't have my meta gem or my tank cloak, that Siege of Orgrimmar was definitely, at least normal, was definitely designed for the tank to have these things. And with me lacking skill has definitely had a major impact in trying to stay alive. But it's been fun. I've now tanked everything in Siege of Orgrimmar, at least from flex flex mode, at least the last wing and garage. So I've gotten a nice taste of what Frank does on a weekly basis for us. And I have a little bit more respect for him and a little bit more hate for him because tanks have it very easy also.
Oh yeah, I've talked about it before where it's like tanking my fellow tank Cheese and I will whisper each other a lot when you guys are talking about DPS and healing mechanics and stuff like that. And I'm just like, wow, we got it pretty easy. And he responds like, yeah, we can just sit back and just, you know, face tank the boss and just make sure, you know, our melee paladin isn't standing in poop and getting stuff and moving stuff. It's really easy on tanks at times, and other times it's very hectic.
Making sure he's not getting tricked by the Iron Star and all that fun stuff.
Exactly.
What? Cutting grass in the background?
All right. Awesome.
Or did an 18-wheeler just go through your living room?
Somehow a plane went by and my PTT got stuck somehow.
Oh, okay.
That was a loud plane.
It was a very loud plane.
Do you live on the airport? Or
I live close by a very private airport, and that concerns me because that's the second plane I've heard today that fucking low to my house.
Okay. Well, yeah. We'll keep an eye out. We'll keep an eye out for low flying planes then. Well, you know, that's cool, man. Yeah, I get the feeling sometimes that you tanks just are kind of sitting back and not doing a lot when we're running around like crazy people. But you guys, I mean, you have to have some challenges like Gallicrus. Is that one tough for tanks? I don't even know what fights would be hard for tanks. I guess on, what's his face? Malkorok, it's your job to figure out what's safe, right?
Yeah, I mean, on that one, I just drop raid flares so the raid group can know exactly where not to stand. So I help out in that aspect. But they've changed tanking quite a bit, and because tanks in the past have complained about certain encounters, a lot of the fights are more revolve around watching debuffs on your off tank. And weak auras just makes that just brain dead. So it comes to a point now where it's just like taunt when the off tanks stacks get to three or so on and so forth. There are a couple fights. I'd say that Gallicrus is not hard. Iron Juggernauts for me was difficult figuring out how to stay alive while popping cooldowns and absorbing the mind damage. There's a lot of tank damage in that fight, so rotating my cooldowns properly in that one was fun to figure out. Grosh is definitely fun for tanks. But other than that, really, tanks don't have too much. I mean, I guess you can say on Siegecrafter when we got to go pick up the ad, but even that's easy. I would say probably the hardest fight was probably Spoils, just because DPS wants me to pull and open more boxes, and I'm very limited on the amount of runic power or runes that I have available. So I have to monitor the box is more stricter than other tanks might have to. So for me, that one's kind of a challenge to balance DPS desire and my ability desire to stay alive and open as many boxes as I can. But other than that, really, it's pretty easy.
It won't. I actually had fun doing Spoils. I could definitely feel your pain with having to open the boxes and playing on a Death Knight. You're very limited by your runes and what you can do for AoE. But I didn't feel too terribly bad. Like, I felt very comfortable with it.
Definitely helps to have a hunter misdirecting to you.
Oh, for sure. I could definitely feel us not having it. But we've got a lot of things to talk about this week, and we're doing this show a little late, so we're trying to compress the show as much as we can, yet get the same info out, because we're going to lose Sushi here in maybe about an hour and a half. So we're going to go ahead and jump straight on into Garrosh Hellscream. Garrosh, as Frank kind of put it, you know, it was for tanks, it's very easy. It's not too much to worry about. For your DPS, for your healers, for your casters, you're going to hate this fight, especially when you're learning on it. You're just consistently moving from point A to B, from B to C, from C back to A, maybe over to B. There's interrupts and mind controls and ads, and anything can go wrong at any time and leave you just, you know, up creek without a paddle.
So how did you guys think that this fight compared to Lacian in scale of difficulty? Twice as hard, three times as hard? Because, you know, when a lot of teams encountered Lei Shen, a lot of people couldn't get through it. And even literally, I know in our guild and on our server, the last night before 5-4 hit, there were still people spamming trade looking to get the feat of strength, you know, ahead of the curve, Lei Shen. And there were people that still couldn't get it after all those months. How do you guys think this fight compares to Lei Shen?
For me, I really liked Lei Shen. I felt he was very well balanced. The biggest thing about Lei Shen was getting your transaction or your transition phases down pat, and hoping the RNG doesn't screw you over too much. Garrosh, though, he takes a little bit more to get used to, you know, between phases and the intermissions. But the biggest thing that halts people are the ads that come out in the next to last and the last phase. I mean, you'll have you'll have wipes to the mind control ads, yes, and you'll have wipes to some of the RNG in the fight, but you really have a lot of problems with the RNG of the ads, because someone put it very well, comparing the ads and the Garrosh fight to the, you know, pulling all the ads in the Dark Animus fight. The way that the AdSpawn and Garrosh, they said it's just like if you were to go and activate all of the all of the little ads on the Dark Animus fight and have them empowered.
Yeah, small anima golems.
Yeah, it's just like a gigantic cluster. If you can't.
Okay, well that's all well and good, but you didn't answer my original question. How much harder do you think Garrosh is than Lei Shen?
I think Garrosh is harder in the sense that you have to overcome the RNG. You have to get you have to control those ads a lot better. To be honest, you know, we didn't have a lot of problems with Lei Shen. We spent all of what, 6 pulls on him in our progression. And whereas we spent maybe about 40 or 50 pulls on Garrosh. So I'd say that Garrosh is a little bit harder in that sense. A lot more fun than Lei Shen, but a little bit harder.
Yeah, Frank, what do you think about it?
I've been sitting here bouncing back and forth because I felt like the hardest part about Lei Shen was RNG, but the other thing is our raid group did a really good job controlling it, whereas the interrupts on Garrosh, if they aren't done crisply, you can fail horribly. And the reason that I say that is what happens if you've got two people that interrupt the same person and then the other one doesn't get off and now you've got multiple people to interrupt. Interrupts are on cooldown. To me, that makes it a little bit harder, where the Lei Shen, with the exception of transition phases, the RNG wasn't that bad. Only in transition was RNG bad. So because of that, I feel like Garrosh is harder just because the interrupts, if they aren't done properly, if the ads die next to each other, it can make for a very, very, very tough encounter. So I'm going to go with actually Garrosh being harder because Lei Shen seemed to be easier to control with the exception of the transition phase.
Yeah, it seemed like Lei Shen was a fight where individual accountability was a big deal. If one person screwed up, you know, he could wipe a side or a quadrant, which would in turn wipe the raid. Whereas with Garrosh, instead of one player's job basically affecting the rest of the raid, it's like if one player dies or one player doesn't do their individual job, it doesn't necessarily wipe the raid, but it gimps them like crazy. I mean, trying to 9-man Garrosh would just be insane with the interrupt. So I think Garrosh is like probably at least twice, if not 3 times, the difficulty level of Lei Shen, you know, at tier and at eye level. I thought it was an incredibly hard fight. And for the end of an expansion, I think Blizzard knocked it out of the park. You know, the fact that you're going into different realms and zones and the scenery changes, it seems like, especially when you're running through the dream realms or whatever, it just seems like you're on this crusade where you're it's like a race to the finish sort of thing. It felt really epic battling this guy down, you know.
I do like that aspect of it. It makes it really, really fun. You go back to see Terrace of the Endless Springs, but all those different transition phases or all those different temples that we've seen throughout the expansion. But the thing that I always worry about is being on the West Coast and being on an East Coast server, since the server we're on is based out of Chicago. I'm constantly panicking during that load screen that either I'm going to load in later, especially as a tank that's usually bad, or even just disconnect outright. So far I haven't had any issues though, so it seems like Blizzard managed to do it properly, but it scares me every single time I see that screen.
Yeah, I'm always the first one to load in, and on that Terrace thing, when you're racing to the end, I'm usually always first, and I have to like stutter step and chill back and let the tanks get ahead. But yeah, you know, before we go into actually talking about the fight itself, I think it would be good for us to spend a fair bit of time talking about the setup for the fight, namely 2 healing this fight and the advantages there, and 3 healing this fight and the advantages there. What do you guys think?
Oh, for sure. Just choosing that third healer or having that healer go DPS will make and or break this fight for you. We were 3 healing it in stack for pound when we first started, and the healers at least our main healer Apex said, you know, that there was really no challenge. There was nothing impending happening. The tanks were fine. The raid was fine. And it never turned out that healing was killing us. What was killing us was not having the DPS to push adds, to, you know, push him faster. And so we decided to go with a 2 heal strat. Now, I've been with a group that's done a 3 heal strat and they got it. It just felt a little bit more hectic is all that it did.
Yeah. Even though this is a 10-minute fight, it feels like it's like a speed kill. Like every single section of the fight or segment phase of the fight feels like you're under DPS pressure to get certain things down at certain times. So so in talking about that, the moral of the story here is, yes, you can three heal it if your DPS are just exceptional and your tanks are exceptional and maybe you have some hybrid healing classes like a Disc Priest or a Mistweaver Monk. But I would really, you know, if you're listening to this and you're on Garrosh or you're headed towards Garrosh, which I think a lot of teams are still on Garrosh, you know what I mean? They've gone through and they're working on them and it's been a couple weeks. I would really urge you guys to attempt to two heal this fight, because really the biggest damage is in the beginning when you've got the Iron Stars colliding, which we'll talk about, and then later on when you have Empowered Whirling Corruption. You know, those are, if you can just make it through those two things, having that third healer, he's just twiddling his thumbs or she's twiddling her thumbs. So I would urge you guys, you know, the two tanks, the two healers, and then 6 DPS for this fight, because you're really going to feel it, especially since there are a fair amount, like with my Disc Priest, I don't really have an interrupt per se. So I can't, if I was a third healer, I couldn't really participate in that way. So having those interrupts, especially like up in melee or ranged interrupts on short cooldowns, is really going to help you tremendously in this fight. So, yeah.
Indeed. And I can't really talk too much about the melee perspective, as I've only tanked it in flex, but it's definitely a range. It's an unfavorable fight for anybody. Range are consistently moving all around, but yet they don't have to worry about, melee don't have to worry about the desecrated weapons, but they have to worry about the whirling corruption. I mean, it really doesn't favor any class, but you definitely don't want to have too many melee, as you still need enough range to be able to proc that desecrated weapon throw going out of melee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and having too many melee becomes a big problem during Empowered Whirling Corruption, because if the melee don't pull out and get away from the boss, then you've got a lot of adds stacked up next to the tanks where you don't want them. But I guess, you know, what do you think? We should probably get into this, baby. It's a pretty long fight. So we talked about the raid comp. Kata, did you want to talk about the other parts of the setup of the fight and the markers and such?
It's a little hard to do without having a visual representation here, but if you're looking straight at Garrosh as you've just entered the room, the way that Stack for Pound has done this is we've put up two raid markers on the different sides of that circle in the middle of the room, or we put them close to the back. And these groups, we've split our raid up into two different groups. And what we do on our pool is we'll have one DPS who's dedicated to making sure that our siege engineer, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, is taken care of, and the rest of the DPS are in the heals and whatnot. They stack on their respective markers. And throughout the fight, you know, he's going to throw your desecrated weapons, and the idea is to move from a marker to marker. But so you have your two markers there. You've got what else do we have? We've got one marker set to the left, and you can do it to the left, to the right, wherever you want it. That's kind of a little bit further away from the little center circle. It's a little bit farther out, so you use that for your second phase when you're stacking up for the Whirling Corruption. And I think that's all that we've got marked down.
Okay, so just so the audience is clear, we prefer to tank Garrosh opposite the side of his throne. Well, we tank him in the center, but the safe zone for Iron Stars, which, you know, phase one, you've got, it's about, what is it, about 30 seconds into the fight, maybe 45 seconds into the fight, you have two engineers pop up on these balconies on either side of the room, and they're basically charging up and getting an Iron Star ready, which is a giant, which you've probably seen if you've done this fight, which is a giant whirling flame ball, basically. And so we like our safe zone to be where you enter the room on the opposite side of the throne, which is also where we have our stack points, like my curse just referenced for the desecrated weapons. So, you know, the merits to that, I don't really know why specifically do it that way. That's the way we're comfortable with it. I guess technically it would make just as much sense to tank him and have the safe zone be on the throne side of the room. But I don't think, other than on the pull, that, you know, you're having a little more DPS time by tanking him, you know, towards the throne side, his throne. There's some merit to that, but, you know, we just do it on the other side because that's what we prefer.
We've done it on the other side just because it gives the off tank who's picking up the adds that enter the building a little bit more of a threshold to pick them up before they go and start kicking the crap out of the DPS that are around the room. So that's why we chose it that way, is to give Cheese time to roll around as a monk and pick up threat on everything that's in there besides Garrosh. And we have plenty of time for him to do that. So I think that's why we selected to do it that way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's the only real benefit to choosing this side during the first phase. And that's the only time it's really going to become imperative that you pick which side. It's just how you want to deal with the adds. Do you want them to have a little bit more time running towards you, or do you want to be able to pick them up right as they spawn? That's all it's really, useful for.
Okay. So Frank, why don't you tell us a little bit about the pull, from both the tanking, the off-tanking's perspective, and talk about the pull and talk about how much time it takes for the first adds to spawn and picking up and positioning those guys.
I generally tank Garrosh, so usually I'm going to be the one that starts the pull. So do my raid countdown, run in, pick him up, and I drag him pretty much as far back as possible to go into the to get to the safe side or the safe zone area. A perfect way to describe it is if you look on the floor of the actual room, there's going to be like a horde symbol. So the circle with the bottom part cut off. So at that point, there's you can almost draw a line with your imagination. Anything past that, closer to where Thrall got kicked instead of closer to the actual throne room, is a safe zone for the actual iron stars that come out. So I like to drag him all the way back there as quickly as possible, get as much threat as possible, get him back as quickly as possible while still holding threat, so my DPS can go to town without having to worry about it. So and then drag him into that safe spot. Usually the adds come out pretty quickly. And at that point, our off tank is running, grabbing one side of him with the keg smash or whatever he does, and then running to the other side and picking him up. And then he generally will bring him back to where Garrosh is, so at that point we can start getting AoE going out. Whoever is going to be the Garrosh tank, though, needs to be aware of certain things. Garrosh can hit very, very hard, especially if you're under-geared. So be prepared for that. Get your cooldowns ready. The more cooldowns you have, the better off you're going to be. So if you're not a tank that generally uses their trinket cooldowns, make sure you're using them because they will save you. Second thing is, if you're on Garrosh, you get a ton of vengeance. So make sure that when the adds are brought to you, you are careful not to over-threat the tank that is actually tanking the adds, because you don't want to tank both of them, because then you're going to get hit like a truck. So watch your threat, and that's as much as you got to worry about during phase one.
So when you get all that Garrosh vengeance, are you chilling out on your cleave damage initially, just so you can are you basically single targeting all that threat back, all that vengeance back to Garrosh? Is that what you're talking about, pulling off your off tank?
I will be very, very careful not to go crazy with my AoE. So basically, I will give the off-tank plenty of time to make sure he's got good threat on him with a couple kick smashes, whatever he needs to do, before I start dropping Death and Decay and spread my diseases to all of them. I will definitely do that, just because it does help burn them down quickly or quicker if I am also helping DPS them, but you seriously have to watch your threat and manage your threat over that one, because the Garrosh tank gets a ton of vengeance compared to the ad tank.
I love this part of the fight. This is a melee's wet dream, and this is coming from a Rhett that has no four-piece bonus, which is AoE, and last tier's trinkets, essentially, and, well, one flex trinket, and just getting up there in boss crotch and AoEing the living heck out of these adds. It is amazing to see 500,000, 600K damage in this first minute of the fight. It is just crazy. I love it. And you referenced that symbol. It's an Omega symbol, like the Greek symbol Omega. I thought that was really cool that it's like there's an Omega symbol at the end of the boss, because Alpha and Omega's the end. But so you got this guy pulled back, and then Kata, earlier you referenced having the group split on the two markers back where you enter the room. Tell us about why, the merits of splitting the group versus having everybody that's arranged in a healer stacked on one side or the other.
We've actually done both methods, where we've had everyone stacked up together and then just moved from spot to spot based on the desecrated weapon throws. And Apex actually came up with the idea of, hey, why don't we just split the group and have them on, well-balanced sides? So what will happen is, if you're on the right-hand side, facing Garrosh, if you're on the right-hand side up against the wall and he throws a desecrated weapon at you, that entire right side will then go to the left side. And the right side is now responsible for burning down their weapon and then going back over. That way, the left side, they don't have to move. They can continue DPSing. And if they have, you know, some cleave that they can throw, maybe like their multi-dot class, your Destro locks, they can help a little bit if they want. You know, everything helps. But it tries to keep as much of that DPS focused on the garage as you can, so that you don't have so many of those iron stars rolling through.
If you're doing a,
I do too. It's based on having played a caster when Apex came up with that. I was like, damn, why did Iron Deficiency not try this? This would have made me so much happier, because that's all I did as a warlock was just run, and that's. It's a little hard to do your rotation when you're just consistently moving, and all you can do is just throw in a very low-hitting filler spell. But
yeah, and so just to clarify to everybody out there, so desecrated weapon happens throughout the fight, and in the first phase, this is going to happen within about 15 seconds of the pull. He's going to drop down his first desecrated weapon, which, you know, hits all the players within 15 yards for, you know, a decent, it takes a second to tick, but it starts ticking for 150k shadow damage, right? So I've been in a couple flexes and been asked to lead the fight since I've done it on normal several times, and people want to fight me on this. They say, no, we all need to be stacked up on one marker, and then when desecrated weapon hits, then we move to the other marker. And really, guys out there, if you're doing this strat, I really recommend splitting up the groups, because it does a couple things. Number one, your groups are already pre-split for going into the dream zone, which we'll talk about in a second. But half your people are not going to get hit with that ticking damage, you know, because in a perfect world, you'd move out of desecrated weapon the second it hits, but it's not a perfect world. So A, half your group doesn't get hit with that damage, and B, the other half of the group continue DPSing without having to move. That's a significant DPS increase throughout the whole fight. So we really, really like this strat a lot, you know, splitting the groups. But yeah, I mean, do it how you're going to do it, but that's the way we recommend for sure.
And chiming in here real quick, as a tank, occasionally the desecrated weapon will affect melee and the tank. So you just need to keep your head on a swivel and move if necessary from one side to the other. Just do it kind of in a slow manner so your melee DPS can still move and DPS at the same time.
Okay. So basically, we've talked about the pull, we've talked about the group splitting and the positioning, and we've talked about how to handle desecrated weapons. Within about the first minute of this fight, actually, yeah, about the first 45 seconds to a minute, you're going to get a desecrated weapon, you're going to get the adds, you know how to handle those. Then the first siege engineers come out, the Iron Star engineers, and you really need to predetermine who's going to handle this. And there's a couple ways to do it. If you have, you know, like a rogue, you know, he can shadow step up there, but generally you want to have a ranged class do this. If you're in a position where you do have a dispriest that's pretty well geared in Iron Deficiency, I am in charge of Iron Star engineers. And the reason we do this is because my DPS is decent. It's 40 or 50K throughout the fight. And it is ample to take down one of these engineers. By me handling this, it allows a warlock or a shadow priest or a mage to just sit on the boss and sit on the adds. It's a substantial DPS increase for a healer to handle this. And I do have to use some tricks to do it. I'm running over to the left side as you're facing the throne, which is, you know, so our safe zone's at the back of the room, like I talked about. But having me do this really is advantageous, and I would recommend anyone that has a healer with some DPS capabilities to do it. I do have to pop my Archangel to get the first one down, and I do have to pop my Shadow Fiend for the second one to have enough DPS. And if I really get into trouble, you know, I can pop a pot, basically a Jade Spirit pot, and have the juice to get this guy down. But I really don't have a lot of trouble getting these guys down. And with me handling this, you know, it just adds so much. One of the other big benefits to having a Dispriest handle this or a healer that can DPS is that the added DPS by having your mages and your warlocks staying on the boss means that you're only going to have two Iron Star engineers instead of three. And that's just massive for this first phase.
It is. Anything that you can cut down on that Iron Star damage when it explodes is going to help. And pushing the phase faster. There's not a lot, besides the Iron Star damage, there's not a lot of damage outside of the tanks that's coming in if the DPS aren't standing in poo and whatnot. But like you said, it's a very long fight, but yet every phase of it feels like just a gigantic DPS push. Just push them as hard as you can. We're tired of being in this stage. You know, the second phase, all right, you know, the hell with this. We're tired of being in here. And to the third phase. The third phase is the biggest DPS push of them all, because that's when everything goes to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, I read an interview somewhere where somebody compared this to like a race where it's basically like you never have any time to actually take a breath or anything. It's just 150 miles per hour the entire time. So that is one fun part about this fight, is there's never really any down part where it's like, whoo, take a breath and then get back into it. One thing I want to point out, though, so she said we talked about the ads. We talked about DPS and the ads, but we never got into all the ads. Besides the Siege Engineer, which I'd say is your priority numero uno ad, that's going to be at least one of them is. You have to kill that. No exceptions, otherwise you wipe the raid. The second one you really have to worry about is going to be the Wolf Rider. And the biggest reason you're worried about the Wolf Rider is because he will cast Chain Heal. So just like all the other times you ever seen a Shaman come out, think of it as a Shaman. It casts Chain Lightning, casts Chain Heal. You need to interrupt that Chain Heal so it doesn't heal the adds. And then, so interrupt it, kill it, do everything. Also keep in mind that every time you interrupt him, he actually gains something that increases his cast speed. So don't interrupt his Chain Lightning. Save it for his Chain Heal, because that's when you really want to interrupt it. So that's your ad priority number two. And then the rest of them you just kill off really quickly. Another trick is if you've got people with pushbacks, knockbacks, whatever you want to call it, when the Iron Star is coming out, if you've got somebody that can knock all of the adds into the Iron Star, it'll actually do a lot of damage to anybody that's in its path, including the adds. So if you still have adds up, knock them back, get somebody to knock them up back into the Iron Star to either kill them off for you or do a ton of damage. Plus, you also could get an achievement, so keep that in mind as well.
What's the best way to get adds positioned into the Iron Star path of death? I mean, I know there's a couple ways as a death knight and as a monk, but what do we do and what do you recommend for getting those adds over there?
Well, as a death knight and having a monk, we can cheat. I've got actually Gorfine's Grasp macroed with a targeting macro for Cheese's statue. So basically what happens is if I feel like they aren't going to get knocked back in time, I can actually hit that macro. It'll pull everything towards that statue, and then the statue happens to be in the path of the Iron Star, which means they all take damage. Now, I've never actually had to use it, because every time I think about using it, next thing I know, I've got a Druid Typhooning them, or I've got our Elemental Shaman who's really on top of things, who will knock them into the Iron Star. So I've actually never had to use it. So what we like to do is we'll group them up in the middle, right next to the bottom of the Omega symbol on the carpet, and then as soon as the Iron Star starts trucking along, we knock them into it. They take all kinds of damage. We giggle at them because they're about to die, and we continue on.
And sometimes Sushi gets tricked into following them.
Exactly.
I do. We reference that on past episodes. You know, I have one of the shorter interrupts as a ret pally, you know, rebuke only being like 12 seconds or 15 seconds or whatever it is. And you know, I like to help out with these guys. I have my targeting macro for the Farseer Wolf Rider, and I want to get their heals interrupted. I want to participate with those guys and DPSing them. But, you know, right at that phase, because like I mentioned, on my Dispriest, on my other team, I handle Iron Star. So I'm very acute and astute about what's going on with that. But, you know, as a melee, you're right up in there. I don't see the Iron Stars. I'm getting better now, like I said. But
well, it's also helps that I'm sure that I'm calling it out now. So you're aware that Iron Star is about to come trucking your way.
All right. So phase one, you know, we got the pull, we got handling the weapons, we got handling the Iron Stars, handling the adds. Is there anything else we need to talk about before going into intermission?
I'm thinking, you know, as far as the Siege Engineers go, like we said, you know, you only need to kill one. So whichever side you want to kill, you know, you want to be the safe zone, just make sure you kill the one that's on that side. So, you know, don't worry about having to kill the other one. You just need one. If you do end up having a ranged DPS do it, make sure that they're paying attention, because you have 15 seconds to kill this guy before the Iron Star goes off. And make sure, you know, if it's a DPS that needs to pull resources to be able to do it, they can pull resources. So staying on top of that is the biggest thing, because you don't have a lot of time to play around.
The other thing is just, hate to bounce around, but the Iron Star, make sure that somebody is ready for it, because when it actually hits the opposite side of the wall, it will explode, doing damage. And the further you are away from the explosion, the better you're going to be. So make sure you're far away from it when it actually hits a wall. Otherwise, it does a ton of damage to you. So might need raid cooldowns available for it, i.e. Spirit Shell, whatever's necessary at that point. Make sure everybody's got rejuve on them. Second thing is, as a Death Knight, if you AMS that, you get a full bar of runic power.
Runic power.
It's delicious.
Yeah, I don't think the damage is that big of a deal, you know, on it. I have plenty of time to get over there, not only kill it, but get back using a Warlock portal, put out a full power-infused Spirit Shell with Inner Focus, and, I mean, they can barely feel it. Like, you know, I do that on the first one. On the second one, I'll do a Power Word Barrier, and, you know, it's just not a big deal. And with this strat, you should only have to handle two cycles of Engineers. I don't think it's a big deal at all.
Yeah, but if you're running that three healer comp, you have the heals now to be able to withstand a very powerful strike, so nothing to worry about there.
Egg Zachary. Okay, well, once you get Garrosh down to 10% of his health, he's going to transition. So what's going to end up happening is he runs to the middle. You still have to be careful because if you happen to have an Iron Star coming out, it will still come out even when he's transitioning. So be aware of that. If adds are still there, kill the adds as quickly as possible. He's going to transition most likely right about that same time. He's going to heal back to full, and you're going to be transported into one of his dream phases. And basically, you'll be transported to either Temple of the Red Crane, Temple of Jade Serpent, Terrace of the Endless Springs. With the two temples, you really want to set it up. You've got your raid groups separated, one tank for each side and stuff like that. One's going to go left, one's going to go right. Terrace of the Endless Springs, you're all going to run down to the very end. Now, on that one, it's important to note that DPS, until you get to the very end, does not do any damage. Tanks are the only ones that should be doing it, and they should even not be doing that much damage. They want to get initial aggro and run to the very end. Now's a perfect time for a druid to pop his thing where everybody's fast. Anybody that's got any speed burst, use it because you want to get down to the very end as quickly as possible. Kill everything. Anytime you kill an ad, keep an eye on the ground because there's going to be this little white bubble. And what you want to do is you want to get that bubble. You want to have the entire raid have a bubble because it's going to give them a protection. It's going to be called consume courage, faith, or hope. And what it does is it reduces damage taken by 50%. Because once you kill everything or down to the very end, Garrosh is going to start doing annihilate. If you are standing in front of him during the frontal cone damage, you will die. End of story. There's no way to put it nicely. You are going to die. So you always need to be at the back. If you need to follow Warlock and Hunter Pets, follow the Warlock and Hunter Pets. Just stand behind him. Additionally, every time he does the Annihilate, he's going to inflict a ton of damage, raid-wide damage anyways. But if you've got the buff, you're going to take reduced damage. There is a trick to it, though. So, Sushi, since you're the one that called me out last time for it, go ahead and describe the trick to it.
Oh, okay, yeah. So this is the trick for getting the damage reduction buff. And the buff, if you don't know what it looks like to know if you have it or not, if you've ever seen what a priest power infusion looks like, it's a man's face with like glowing flames or fire. And when you have that, you're good. In the terrorist phase, each person gets their own individual one, which is fine. But in the other phases, it's basically this larger cone, basically looks like a miniature power word barrier. And the trick to that, so that everyone can get it, is if you're the first person to it and you can get within 1 yard of it, which means you get right up on the edge and stop. Now, I know we're trying to be as fast as we can in this dream phase or intermission phase, but just get right up close to it, stop, and you'll be in range of it. If someone else bursts it, you can get it on as many people as possible. So don't be too greedy there and get the giant AoE buff for yourself when all your other people are 10 yards away. Just stutter step, you know, just stop right there on the edge and you can get it for everyone. And this trick works phenomenally well, even when you are in a hurry.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That's the biggest thing that's going to happen in this intermission phase, besides the cleave, that's going to knock you down. If you don't have people that are being considerate and can, if you don't work together in this, then your heals are going to have to work extra hard to make sure that not only are they not standing in poo, but to make sure that you are getting healed, because you're going to need serious heals after every annihilate that goes off. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, as a disc priest, if I put out a spirit shell right at the very beginning of, you know, you kill all the adds, and then Garrosh is basically shielded behind some Shaw energy, and you know, then he's finally, you're able to DPS him. If you put out a spirit shell right before that, you know, you can cover a first couple of these annihilates, but and still have the timer be available for the next phase. But you got to be really careful, because you don't want to use too many big healing cooldowns in the intermission phase. You just want to do, you know, your spot healing, your AoE healing, because you're going to need those healing cooldowns for stage two. So be a little careful there, and it definitely helps when everybody's got that damage mitigation debuff.
Indeed. Now, while Garrosh is in there, before you kill all the adds, as Sushi mentioned, he's actually immune to damage, so don't even bother wasting time trying to attack him until all the adds are dead and he starts casting Annihilate, then feel free to DPS. Now, while he's in there, though, before all that's happening, he's actually draining energy from the heart of Ysarj. The more energy he gets, the more his actual abilities change. Once you're out of the transmission, you actually go into a second or part two transition. So you come out, and now at actual 25 energy, his rolling corruption, will actually become empowered. So he's got two different things. Rolling corruption, before it's empowered, will just do 105k shadow damage to nearby enemies within or every 5.2 seconds, and it will decrease the further away from Garrosh. So melee may need to run out if healing's an issue, but you might want to just stay in, pop cooldown, a personal cooldown, and stay alive. But once it reaches 25 energy and becomes empowered, what happens is Garrosh will fire a missile at a player or at random players, inflicting 200k shadow damage to enemies within 8 yards. The biggest part of that is it's also going to spawn a minion of the Ysarj. These little buggers are horrible. This is when the tanks need to make sure that they have zero AoE happening, because you do not want to pull threat on these. What happens is if you kill one around another, it's going to pop and actually cast an ability on them where basically it's going to increase their health by 200% and their damage by 200%, and it stacks. So you want to make sure that these adds are spread out, and that's how you want to kill them. So the tanks really want to be careful not to get aggro. Whoever's not tanking Garrosh can run around, taunt an ad, get it away from the other ads, and kill it as quickly as possible and run back in. I do that frequently. I'll death grip stuff off of other people so the healers can concentrate on that. But you really need to make sure that they are all spread out. So very, very similar Dark Animus in this case.
Okay, so Frank, you're basically talking about the speed in which you handle the dream phase. Popping out of your first dream phase, you should not have the 50 energy, Garrosh should not have the 50 energy to empower Whirling Corruption, right? You will get it at after the second dream phase, right?
Yes.
But so don't be slow in this part, or you're going to have problems early on in the fight. So, okay, so we've come out of the first dream phase. We've all basically dropped back down into the original room, and we're starting stage two. Kata, as a ranged DPS, what's your top priority getting dropped back in for phase two?
Okay, so you drop right back in, and the worst thing in the world happens. You're disoriented. Not in game, but personally, you are disoriented because you've just been dropped into the room. You now have to reorient yourself. You're like, okay, you know, I'm facing the throne. So I need to make sure that I get to whatever stack marker we want to use. Because as soon as you come out, you've got maybe about either from like 8 to 10 seconds before he throws a desecrated weapon. So you have to make fast decisions. You've got to get to your stack marker where you're going to be putting the desecrated weapons. And then after that, you have to instantly run away from, you know, you've got to run out of the desecrate. It's bad. It's poo. You don't want to stand at that. But he's going to be doing a mind control seconds after that. So now you have to go either stack on the boss, whether, you know, your team wants to do that, or you have to go to another marker if you're not stacking on the tanks for it. So this is where everything just comes fast-paced. You now have desecrated weapons instantly happening. You've got mind controls happening. You've got, let's see what else we have. We have desecrated weapons, mind controls, and the whirling corruption. You know, so every time he throws an ability, you've got to move for the next one.
It's a dance for sure. And this is where the importance of having someone, whether it's your raid leader or your lead healer or whatever, somebody's got to be doing the call outs for coordination, at least on your first 10 or 20 pulls on this guy. So you know exactly where to go. But you're right. You go out, drop the weapon, you come back in for mind controls. I like stacking up on the boss for mind controls because it allows the tank and the off tank to help participate with the interrupts as well as the melee participating with the interrupts, right?
You know, it can change. It can change raid group to raid group. If you have enough interrupts and whatnot in your in your range classes, then you can get away with it. Seeing as the tanks shouldn't be targeted for this mind control. Am I on the right path there, Frank?
I've never been targeted by it until the raid is pretty much. It's basically a wipe because everybody else has been mind controlled. So at first, at least, we'll be the last selected, basically. So yeah, it's basically you'll be the last selected. As a Death Knight though, I have lots of tools where I can actually significantly help out with mind controls, because the mind controls at this stage before they become empowered can be actually they're still susceptible to actual CCs. So it doesn't just mean interrupts. There's all kinds of different things you can do. So I like to spec into a 68 for this fight as a Death Knight. So I'll actually 68 somebody, and usually my team can burn them down to 20% health before the 68 ends. So Paladins with Hammer of Judgment, or Justice, pardon me, 68, Fear, anything you can think of that is a CC will work at this stage of the game. And then just get your interrupts off if the CC is broken. And basically during this time, if they become CC'd or mind controlled, pardon me, you've got to kill them, or not kill them. You got to drop them down to 20%. You do have to watch though, because you don't want to have lingering dots there, because yeah, it could kill somebody if you're not paying attention, because you are dropping them down to 20%. And you also have to fight that urge to get that killing blow in. So be careful with any executes, because you want to hit it so bad and you just got to be really, really careful.
It's muscle memory, you know.
It really is. I see that stuff light up and it's like, oh yeah, execute. Oh wait, that's bad. So yeah, be really, really careful.
On the topic of fear, you don't want to fear him out into Egypt unless you have a glyph that makes your fear cause the target to cower instead of like run off. But yeah, everything you've got, the Warlock double stun is amazing on this. From a healing perspective, I'm literally spamming Power Word Shield on the target as they get low. So the second my Voodoo changes them from an enemy target to a friendly again, they've got a Power Word Shield on them so that, you know, they don't get nuked by a dot, by an accidental dot or something like that.
Yeah, it's usually no bueno when that happens. So you really, really got to be careful with mind controls. And this is going to be your primary raid wiper. I would say this and ads are going to be your raid wipers for a long time, just because setting up your interrupts perfectly and crisply is very, very hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so phase two, it's not that big of a deal. You know, like we said, you step out for weapon, you step in for mind control, you step back out for whirling corruption. I referenced, needing a healing cooldown for this. You can use your personals definitely, like as a melee, as a ret, I'll pop a divine protection and just stay right in melee during phase two, and then just be selfless healer, flash healing myself. So I figured the GCDs used by the healing myself is going to be a lot less detrimental to my DPS than running out of DPS range and back in. So, you know, melee can use personals in phase two. But you do this little dance for a little while. You do kind of need a stack point a little further away from the boss for whirling corruption, because its damage is reduced the further you are away from the boss. So you do this little dance around for a few times. Phase two, I didn't find to be that big of a deal, to be honest. You do the cycle a couple times, and then, you know, you're getting gripped back up into the dream world again. But this time you're in the dream world, dream sequence, and the energy basically that Garrosh has harnessed from the first dream phase, it doesn't reset. He's adding to this. So I imagine later in the tier, when people get more gear, start getting some heroic gear, you can come back in and keep Garrosh under 50 energy, because the 50 energy point is really where the fight changes. And that's what makes his Whirling Corruption empowered Whirling Corruption. And the empowered Whirling Corruption spawns little purple pools in phase three, and that's what spawns the ads. So you go through this, you go through the dream world again, and then we really get into the toughest part of the fight, which is the wiper. You know, it's stage three. You're coming back down. This is the last phase of the fight. And this is the fight, you know, you've gone in, it's probably been about 7.5 to 8 minutes, you know, that you've been doing this fight, and you're into the single hardest part with the most coordination. So I guess let's get into phase three, huh?
Sounds good. Real quick on phase two, though, another trick for Death Knights, power, or the Rolling Corruption, AMS, once again, full runic bar. It's delicious, delicious. And then the other thing I want to point out is there is going to be a tank debuff added in part two that you need to be aware of. Usually you can go anywhere from, depending on the gear levels, you can go from 4 stacks to 8 stacks depending on how much you can take. So it's kind of handle how you'd like it as far as tanks go. So just something to be aware of. Okay. But yeah, you go into the transition phase again, you come back out and deal with all that stuff. But once Garrosh reaches 10%, now you're in phase three. He heals back to full. He becomes all purpley and goofy looking and taken over by Shaw's again. And now every single one of his abilities are basically empowered.
Okay. He only heals up to about 30-35%. So okay. It's at that point in the fight, though, it feels like full.
Isn't it like 35% minus whatever the burn you got on him? You know how in phase one, his first transition into the dream phase, you know, he goes back up to full. And then if you can get like a 7% burn on him before that first dream phase transition, doesn't that subtract from his health in this phase? And that's the importance of that burn, right?
It's odd how this one works, because when he's doing that transition from the phase to the very last phase, he's going to run to the center of the room, and he's going to throw his axe up into the heart, and you've got maybe about 10-15 seconds here of silence. Not really silence in game, but this is the calmest part of this entire stage. So he starts at that 10% is when he starts the transition. If you can take another 5% off before he does that final morph, that final transition, then he will start with 5% less health.
Right. Okay. And you know, we never really talked about hero. You know, you can, if you're a little bit slower group, you're new to the fight may go over 10 minutes, in which case you can hero on the pre-pull or on the pull and have hero up again for this phase. But as you get gear and as you transition, that's something you need to talk about. Using hero at the beginning and or at the end. And the merits are at the beginning, you'll burn adds and you'll burn him down fast enough to where it's probable that you'll only have 2 Iron Star Engineers instead of dealing with 3. Or if you decide to save it, which I'm starting to become more of a fan of saving it as we're killing the fight in, you know, under 10 or under 9 minutes. I like having it here at the end because things get crazy.
Yeah, it's, you definitely want to save anything you can for that 30% burn, a 35%, whatever you've got left. Even if you've got like your normal 2-minute cooldown, like if it's come off and you've got maybe another 4% to burn, you know, if it's something that pairs up well with heroism and you've decided to save heroism, sit on it. You know, might as well sit on it, because the likelihood of stage three lasting 2 minutes for you to be able to get it off again, I'd say that's very unlikely, because stage three is all about the just turn and burn. Burn him before he burns you.
And it's utter chaos while having to stay controlled. So stage three, you know, just to get into it, it's very similar to stage two. You know, he's dropping his desecrated weapon. He's doing the mind controls. But this time when he does Whirling Corruption, it's empowered. And this is a phase where initially as a melee, I was like, you know, I can probably just paladin my way through empowered Whirling Corruption. And I can from a damage phase. I could even bubble through it. And it's still a damage increase for me to stay on the boss with the 50% bubble reduction than it is to run around. But the problem is, if your melee are staying up on the boss and they get the purple pools under them, you know, A, they're going to be taking a lot of damage from standing in melee. That damage is going to bleed onto the tanks, and adds are going to spawn under the tanks. So this is the biggest part of the fight. empowered whirling corruption when you have to really kind of get on one side. So you're all around your healers and you have to spawn your ads in a very controlled and spaced out manner, just like Dark Animus. It's exactly like Dark Animus. So you want to get on that one side. You want to spawn the ads, and you basically want to take on the personal responsibility of stunning your ad and DPSing your own personal ad. Once your ad is down, then you can go assist other players. But you really have to do this in a very quick fashion, because mind controls come out immediately after the ads spawn, right, guys?
Yeah.
These mind controls. Oh, go ahead.
We're actually thinking on the same page here. The mind controls are very special in this sense that in this very last stage when they're empowered, the only way to defeat these mind controls is to interrupt them. Straight interrupt. No stuns, no CCs. They're not going to affect them. They're now immune to CCs. Only stuns are really going to work now. You know, your knockbacks, yeah, it'll stop them from casting during that period where they're being knocked around. But as soon as they stop, they're going to start casting again. So if you're looking for just a quick, you know, oh my gosh, my interrupt is on, you know, cooldown for a few more seconds, you can throw a knockback out, but it's not going to solve your problem. It's just going to delay it for a little bit more. So this is where your interrupts are on. You know, they need to be on key the most they've ever been, because it doesn't take much for this fight to go off. If you've got two people mind controlled and one of them gets it off, you can salvage it. But if you've got two people mind controlled and they get off their mind controls, that's it. You know, you might as well just pack it up and go home for the day.
Yeah, and when you have mind control on you, you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs. There's nothing you can actually do for a few seconds. So it's definitely worth it to be the person, if you're mind controlled, keep a look at your cast bar and say, you know, interrupt me, guys, interrupt me. Like, as it's getting halfway, because the cast is a fairly long cast. So once you're out of the halfway, you know, say it. Say, I need an interrupt on Sushi now. You know, let people know. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And if you can get past this, you mentioned that the Desecrator weapons are still being thrown out. They are, but at this point, if you've had someone that's been dotting the weapons, if you decided not to kill them, in this last phase, I wouldn't even waste your time with it. Don't throw any pets, no clones if you're a Windwalker monk, you know, no multi-dots, no nothing, because in this phase, they can't be killed. So it's utterly useless trying to dot them up and try and make some space. Like we said, this is your turn and burn phase. You know, I've even gone as far to say that even if you're three healing it, if you're trying to control adds and still kill him, I'd still say don't even bother with DPSing adds in this phase. I mean, it's that imperative, trying to knock him down before he knocks you down.
Oh, mind controls have to be top priority.
Oh, sure, but
mind controls are the top priority. DPS and Garrosh is number two. In fact, we've even gotten to a point with our group where during third phase, when the ads come out, one tank is going to basically be a Garrosh tank. One tank's going to be an ad tank. And you just kite them around without killing anything. Because remember, if you kill one, it's going to make everything else hit for a lot harder and increase their health. So you really don't want to do that. So basically get initial aggro on them and just start running around the room like a chicken with your head cut off. Don't outrange your healers. Roll your cooldowns properly and hope your DPS can burn them down before you get burned down by the ad.
Okay, Frank, you know, that was something I was going to ask you about. So let's be really, really clear about exactly how we do phase three in a couple seconds. So we come back in, drop a weapon, go for stack for mind controls, back out for empowered whirling corruption. Now we're handling the first set of ads for sure. We're killing those guys out and then coming back in for mind controls. We usually get a second set of ads that we are trying to handle very cleanly, right? And then correct. Isn't the okay, so we're doing everything clean, but when the boss gets around 12, 10%, 8%, somewhere around there, if we do get a third empowered whirling corruption, we're definitely staying at range and healing through this. But when the ads spawn, we're coming back in, handling our last mind control, and then if there's any ads left, we're just saying screw it. The tank's picking them up and kiting them the heck out of there, right? So that we can just burn this guy.
Exactly. So in this case, what we ended up doing is since I was the ad, quote unquote, ad tank for our group, is I would tank Garrosh for as long as possible. Once the ads came out and it was clear that it was time to pick him up, the off tank would then taunt Garrosh, and now he has him for the duration of the fight, and I have the ads for the duration of the fight. So both tanks are taking a significant amount of damage at this point. So you really, the healers need to be aware of that. Roll cooldowns on the tank, iron bark, pain suppression, whatever you happen to have, hand of sacrifice, everything. Even if you've got an example would be Sushi as a ret paladin. He does glyph into the hand of sacrifice, and he will sack one of the tanks to help out because the tanks do take a significant amount of damage during this part of the fight. So be aware of that tanks, be aware of that healers, and just kite them around as much as possible because they will hit very hard if they get close to you.
So I imagine as we get a little bit more gear, we'll be able to stay slow and controlled throughout the end, but the end's just insane. It's just like every other part of the fight. It's just this crazy rush not to lose control. And you kind of, it's kind of like Nazgrim in that way, where Nazgrim, you know, you get two sets of ads and you have to make the decision. Are we going to burn this guy with the potential of the shaman to heal him back up and be screwed? Or are we just going to, you know, stay slow and controlled? And I right now it's a little chaotic at the end for us. And I think for a lot of teams that are squeaking this guy out to kill him. But, you know, if you can just keep from people from getting mind controlled, the ads can be kited, you know, and you can get this guy down. Average, I think most teams earlier in the tier were taking about 60 pulls. Now that we're, you know, 10 weeks out from the drop of 5.4, I think 50 pulls with 40 being the average is kind of your sweet spot. So, you know, if you've only done 20 pulls on this guy and you're frustrated with yourself or your team, settle in. It's taking good teams, you know, and I'm not talking about 1% or top 100 heroic rating guilds. I'm talking about your average kind of upper end team. It's taking those teams about 50 pulls to pull it off. So, you know, you're going to be in there a while and it's going to take some time. It's a 10-minute fight and you're going to struggle in the last minute. So, you know, 9 pulls, you know, it's 9-minute pulls, you know, that's about 5 pulls an hour with time in between. So you're really only getting about 15 pulls a raid night on this guy. So don't be frustrated. It's going to take a couple weeks to get through. But man, the spoils at the end of this fight. Oh man, I just love how Blizzard has kind of hooked us up for killing this guy ahead of the curve. Frank, are you pretty excited about what Garrosh has in his chest of booty?
Well, I've yet to receive one of these coveted BOA weapons. I'm very excited to get one. I can't wait to get one. So that's got me excited for if I ever happen to get a BOA weapon. But oh yeah, the title I could care less about, but this mount that you get for killing him ahead of the curve, the Korkron Warwolf, has become one of my absolute favorite mounts. I am rocking this on pretty much every single one of my teams.
You know what, man? I think it was on this show a little while back. Yeah, it was like 3 episodes ago that I wasn't super stoked about the Warwolf. But now hearing you guys' excitement has made me excited. And I love popping this guy out on my level 20 and just being like, what's up? You know, like come at me, bro. Come at me, you know?
That and the fact it's the only wolf the Alliance have access to. I love it.
Yeah. I'm digging it more now. I like it. And you know, when you get this kill, which congrats to you guys that are getting the kill, you get the title Conqueror of Orgrimmar. I can't think of another title as an Alliance player, whether you're into PvP or not, especially if you're into PvP, rocking that Conqueror of Orgrimmar title, that's badass, man.
I still haven't seen a lot of Conquerors running around, at least on Airy Peak, so it's still a challenging fight. And
yeah, I think there's like 6 teams, maybe. No, and actually, it's probably more than that now. I'd have to do a live check-in, which I'm not going to do right now, but just extrapolating. There's probably like 8 to 9, maybe 10 teams that have done it on Airy Peak, one of whom is a 25-man. So you figure, you know, that's only 95 to 105 players on an entire realm that are rocking that title. And on a server that has 80,000 total characters created, that's, you know, that's a 1%er right there. That's a 0.1%er that's got that title. So it's got some swag to it. It's got some gangster to it. I mean, it's a pimping title, dude.
It is. I thoroughly love the fact that, you know, that we've earned this title. It's just been, a fun road to it. That's for sure.
Now, do heirlooms exist?
They do. I've seen a few of them drop. I know Primach got her weapon, her
leave bow. Her out of this. Leave her out of
what?
This. She has every bow in the game to choose from.
Well, Saya and Saiga and Stacker Pound received the weapon that she immediately gave to her mage, and I've known a couple of people who've gotten multiple pieces. I believe Deep Fried Oreos has gotten multiple pieces.
Damn. Jeez Louise. That's, I mean, good on him. That's great. I mean, I've killed Garrosh now between both teams at least six times, about six times. And I haven't gotten it. And I roll coins on him all the time. And that's just me, man. I mean, I guess I soaked up all my luck getting a four piece on my priest, but I would love to send it over to my mage and just get OP, because now I have a heroic weapon for the priest. So now this is just an alt weapon. But it just sucks that the RNG did not allow me to get the weapon while it was still useful to me. You know, I mean, I end up getting a heroic weapon, which I'm not complaining about. I mean, that's amazing, right? But now this heirloom's going to be a downgrade for me on my main, which I guess that's the nature of it, right? Dropping off the end tier boss. But I'd love to see it on my pally or something.
Well, so you got to think about it this way. Yeah, it might be a downgrade currently, but don't forget, it's supposed to go up to level 100 as a BOA weapon. So it's going to be a downgrade right now, but a couple levels into the next expansion, it might be the hot piece. So you might be using it on your priest eventually if you were to get it.
Dude, that's a good call. You know, I didn't even think about that. Level 91, and you know, I tick 91 in the new expansion, and my heirloom could potentially be better than the heroic weapon. So I guess I'll have to obtain it first.
Yeah, keep in mind, the way I've heard that it's working is always going to be main spec first. So if I'm on a Death Knight, most likely I'm going to end up getting a two-handed axe, or whatever it may be. If you're on the priest, most likely you're going to get something that will work for your priest. You shouldn't get a rogue dagger off your first one. But then after that, you're not guaranteed anything anymore. You will get whatever you happen to get. So keep that in mind as you're actually going through Garrosh and killing him on flex and normal modes. Is after that very first one for that character specific. After that, it's no holds barred. You could get a tanking shield. I mean, you could get all kinds of stuff that you may not have any interest in. So be prepared for that.
Okay, but it still drops like a Titan Runestone or like a Secret of the Empire. It's still a random drop. You don't have to drop a coin on it after you get your first one. It'll just appear in your bags if it's going to appear at all, right?
Exactly. So if it just happens to drop, it just happens to drop. And after that first character specific, you might be able to gear up your paladin off of your priest.
Cool. That's awesome.
It's a stretch to do it, but you know, you can. Speaking of pallies and transitioning out of the boss, Sushi wants to rant, and I want to hear this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So at the beginning of the show, I referenced, you know, playing a little Hearthstone, and I tried to be sensitive to our listeners, because prior to me having a beta key, I would listen to podcasts and they would go into 5 to 15 minutes on Hearthstone, and I would just turn off the podcast. You know, I would just be like, nope, I'm not supporting this podcast. You're talking about Hearthstone. Hearthstone isn't WoW. So I didn't want to listen to it at the end, but if you've listened this long, I'll drop a little rant. So I got into Hearthstone a little bit here on Thanksgiving and really started getting into it. And you know, I played a number. Once I got through, I unlocked all the decks finally, which was great. I unlocked the Paladin deck, which was going to kind of be my main deck because I love my Pally and the mechanics of it. I got into playing, and I played a number of different players of different skill levels and whatnot. But I bumped into this one guy, and this is after having a fairly large sample size of players. And this person was also playing Pally, so it's Pally on Pally deck. And from the first turn, if you've ever played Hearthstone, if you're taking too long on your turn, a very Looney Tunes cartoon type of fuse basically for a bomb starts on one side of your screen, on the left side, and goes to the right. The fuse ignites the, you know, pass to the next to the enemy turn. It's basically a Jeopardy music of da, 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 da. That ends in a little explosion. You lose your turn. Okay, so there's your background if you don't play it. But if you do, you know what I'm talking about. And these guys that do this a lot, you know, you can take one or two of them throughout a fight, but literally in the beginning, in the first round, you have one mana gem to spend. And this guy lets it go to the end of the first one. He lets it go to the end of the second one. He lets it go to the end of the third one. And it was just like, then, you know, skipped a couple. We got a couple more turns in. It had to have been about 5 times. I mean, this was like a 30-minute freaking Hearthstone match, this guy. And I was like, you know what? Maybe this guy's multitasking, you know, maybe he's talking to his wife or doing something else. And he's, you know, and it kind of got me through, but I was like, man, this guy does not respect my time. Finally, it came down to the end. I was going to lose. He just had much more in his hand and I was down to just a few health, right? A handful of health. And this dude, rather than taking his, you know, 7 attack and just killing me in one shot, he went through every single one of his remaining cards, okay, and just taking his time with it. I should have conceded, but I was so pissed off that if I was going to lose, I just wanted to lose. And he went and he whittled me down and whittled me down and whittled me down instead of just taking and doing it in one shot. And it just further just wasting my time, not respecting my time. So I want to give a shout out to a Pally deck player named Corn Freak, corn like the band with a K. Corn Freak, you are the king of the douche lords. You are a waster of people's time. Screw you, man. I'm going to get better and I'm going to destroy you the next time I see your stupid little ugly face in Hearthstone.
And so wait, he spelled corn with K?
K with a K, Corn Freak.
So it's like catastrophic or cursed gaming where everything's got a K. Maybe it was him.
It could have been. I mean, I know this guy's fanatical about the band Korn, which I think was relevant about 20 years ago. Maybe I'll go to a Korn concert and seek him out with a sign and punch him right in the ear. Because ear
wasting
punches
your
hurt.
Time.
Yes, I'm going to waste like 3 hours of my time going to a Korn concert. But dude, this aggravating beat. Like if you guys played the game a little, I know you guys have played the game, but. And I understand people can take some time strategizing in their turn, but letting it go to the little fuse like 5 times in a round and at the end, just not finishing me off, just whittling me down. It was just a real middle finger in your face type of move. And it pissed me off to no end enough to where I'm worked up enough to want to come and talk about this. So Corn Freak, you know, at SushiCTR on Twitter, you know, get at me, dude. I want to rip you a new one.
I was going to say, up until the very end when you told me about him whittling your way, I was like, maybe he didn't know there was a button on the side that said pass. So I was going to try and give him pass up until the point where you said he whittled you away instead of just killing you. I was like, eh, okay, now that you said that, I know for a fact he's wasting your time.
Yeah, at first I thought he didn't know how to end his turn, so I was giving him – that's why I stayed in the round for the first 3 rounds, and he was ending it in this way. But then he started clicking it, like he would end turn for a couple rounds and then went back to letting that fuse ignite 2 more times after. And I was just like, dude, you are wearing out my patience, man.
That's great. I love
yeah.
the one Sushi comes
God,
on
that pissed me off.
So after freaking wasting time freak. With that, Sushi went and wasted his time with Battle.
With pet battles? Nah, dude. I'm not doing pet battles. Now that you can get your lessers from the aisle, pet battles is another thing. I'll flip pet battles for gold. Dude, you know, flipping pet battles, either cross-server or cross-faction, is a great way to make gold. And a great way to do that is go to theundermindjournal.com. And if you're thinking about, you know, a lot of people have come to Airy Peak to hang out with the CTR folks. And towards the end of an expansion, when raid teams are starting to dwindle and interests are starting to dwindle, you want to go hang out with your friends, but you don't want to pay the money and you've re-rolled on a different server for funsies or whatever, go to the Undermine Journal, pull up 2 tabs in your internet browser and compare the battle pets from one realm to the other. And oftentimes you'll find a discrepancy where a certain pet is just in high supply on one side, and it only takes 3 or 4 people with a battle pet to really depress the price. We saw this back in Tot with the Dark Son of Animus. We saw it with the Horridon pet, you know, the little pygmy Direhorn, where if you got 3 or 4 people that had it, the price would drop tremendously. And you can find these areas where there's a saturation and there's a price depression, and you can bring that to another realm. And you don't even have to want to play on that realm. You can use it as a gold-making opportunity because the battle pet system so diverse that you could take a pet from, let's say, Airy Peak over to Illidan, like I've done in the past, get a Blingtron to get enough gold to post.